Hey, Scaredy Cats, 2021 was such a great year for horror. We had long-awaited returns for some big franchises. We saw some absolutely bonkers films and some genuinely terrifying ones. We got another Mike Flanagan masterpiece. And on top of all of that, a lot of great horror books came out in 2021. And while I would love to discuss them all, I've narrowed it down to 10, and they are listed in random order. So sit back, pour yourself a hot beveraged because it's time for the Scaredy Cats 2021 highlight reel.
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
We tend to dislike mysteries. We feel uncomfortable not knowing.
What do you think really happened out there?
We're going to start with horror on the small screen. So I already referenced it in the episode's introduction. I called it a masterpiece, so Midnight Mass should come as no surprise. It is 7 episodes of sheer genius. I really don't know what I can say about it that hasn't already been said. It's creepy and harrowing while being profound and poignant. And even though I'm an atheist, I always find meditations on religion and faith so fascinating. And the way that it's done here is incredible. I've read some criticisms about the many monologues throughout the series. You probably have too, but I have to say that they work for me. One, the writing is exceptional. Two, the deliveries are phenomenal. And three, it's a show about religion, so they kind of come off as sermons, which just makes sense from a narrative perspective. You also know that I'm a sucker for a vampire story, and this is such a great take on the lore. This isn't a show that you forget about once it's over. It lingers. Next up, we have Chucky. Taking a beloved horror movie franchise and turning it into a TV series can be risky, but here it pays off. Don Mancini wrote all 8 episodes, so not only does Chucky feel like a natural progression of the movie franchise, it really has an autobiographical slant to it that gives the story arc a lot of heart. Jake Wheeler is really a stand-in for Mancini. In an interview with The Advocate, Mancini said, "This show is probably the most personal thing that I've done in terms of the story itself." The protagonist is a 14-year-old gay boy who's dealing with a lot of issues that I dealt with as a 14-year-old gay boy back in the late 70s. Episodes really delve into who Chucky is and where he came from. The flashback scenes are incredible, and the fact that they cast Fiona Dourif, Brad Dourif's daughter, to not only play Nika Pierce but to play Charles Lee Ray is a stroke of brilliance. It's funny because, of course, it's Chucky, it's shocking, and it's a delight. Oh my gosh, what can I say about the next show? Yellow Jackets. I could probably go on about Yellow Jackets, but I'll try to keep it brief. The Los Angeles Times describes it as bits of Apocalypse Now, The Beach, and Survivor filtered through a female lens. So this pretty much feels like the show I've been waiting for my entire life. 90s girls soccer team survives a plane crash, but is stranded and lost in the Ontario wilderness, apparently. Flash forward, we see 4 of those soccer players grown up, they're living their lives, but what happened? The first episode does a stellar job of hooking you, and that's it. You're a Yellow Jacket now because you need to know. Are there supernatural elements at play? Is it simply the evil that humans can do? Who is Adam? The casting is impeccable. I've been a fan of Melanie Lynskey since I first saw her in Heavenly Creatures, and she is absolutely riveting to watch. But wait, there's more. Christina Ricci and Juliette Lewis too? Those are the big names, but everyone is pitch perfect. Particularly Tawny Cypress, who is new to me, but damn is she amazing as a grown-up Thaisa. The producers didn't try to focus on physical likeness between the characters as their younger and older selves, but damn, they really captured the essence of who each character is. For instance, Sophie Thatcher, who played young Reagan in the Exorcist series, plays the younger version of Juliette Lewis's character, and it is incredible how much she evokes a young Juliette Lewis. And the one to watch out for, Jasmine Savoy Brown, who plays the young Thaisa, is also going to be in probably my most anticipated movie of 2022, Scream. So really excited to see where she goes because she's one to watch for sure. This season hasn't ended yet, and I can't wait to see how they wrap things up, but I'm also dreading slash eagerly anticipating the killer cliffhanger that I'm sure it will end on.
He says his name is Gabriel. Someone from my past.
Why are you drawn to this?
I'm hoping to spread the story all about Candyman. The mirror invites you to summon him. say his name.
Do you believe in ghosts?
Now we're going to talk a little bit about movies. So I'm going to tell you a couple of my honorable mentions first. Werewolves Within, funny, funny werewolf movie. The Vigil, haunting. It's really interesting to see a movie about Jewish folklore turned into a horror movie. It's not something we see very often, and it's incredible. The Medium, probably one of the scariest movies that I saw all year. Absolutely terrifying. One of the best jump scares that I've seen in a very long time. Slumber Party Massacre. I was concerned about this, I'm not going to lie, because Slumber Party Massacre is a movie that I hold very near and dear to my heart. But the remake is so much fun. They deliver some twists, some turns, and it's incredible. And lastly, the Fear Street trilogy. So much fun. Probably one of my best deaths, one of my favorite deaths of the year in the Fear Street trilogy. So check those out. And now let's talk about my favorites of the year, the ones that won out over those incredible movies. So first up, Malignant. Definitely a polarizing movie. If you watched James Wan's latest movie, you probably weren't ambivalent about it. Personally, I loved it. I sat in the theater literally with my mouth agape for much of the last third of it. At times, I looked around as if to say, is this really happening? Did you just see that? I should mention that I went to see it by myself, and I'm pretty sure there was only one other person in the theater. The infamous scene in the police station is absolutely ridiculous and so much fun. It may not be the deepest horror movie that came out last year, but Malignant was probably one of the most riotous. The Night House. This was the first movie that I saw back in the theaters. And wow, we're really changing gears from Malignant. I was so excited for the whole experience. One of my favorite things in the world is going to an afternoon matinee on my own, loading up on popcorn and settling in. So this was a truly welcome return. I think I could have seen the worst movie ever and still had a blast simply because I was back in the movie theaters. Luckily, it was an incredible movie. The Night House, directed by David Bruckner, is a mindfuck of a movie in all the best ways. It tackles some really heavy topics like death, depression, grief, as its ghost story plays out. It's not an easy watch by any means. It made me uncomfortable, but it was definitely my most talked about movie of 2021. And I cannot wait to see what Bruckner does with Hellraiser. Last Night in Soho. Whenever that icebreaker question comes up, you know the one, if you could live anywhere at any time, where would it be? And my answer is always London, England in the 1960s. Last Night in Soho reminds me of why I'm in love with that era, but also starkly illustrates why, as is often the case, romanticizing the past can be dangerous. It is an absolutely gorgeous film, has a killer soundtrack, the performances by Anya Taylor-Joy and Thomasine McKenzie as kind of mirrors of each other are breathtaking. And then you have Matt Smith, who is not my favorite Doctor Who, but he's up there. And Terrence Stamp. Terrence Stamp is just so menacing. And he's just terrifying. He's a masterclass in quiet menace, really. I really appreciate that this is Edgar Wright's first movie kind of from a female perspective. He tends to kind of do the guy buddy thing. And I think he really does a great job illustrating the ever-present threat of sexual violence that women deal with on an everyday basis, not just in the 1960s, but today. The movie is gorgeous. The cinematography is done so well in that it plays much like the themes of the movie does between this light, bright, neon background and these dark, dark, shadowy elements that really help show that beneath this candy-coated exterior of swinging London in the 1960s lies a grubby, lascivious London waiting to prey on pretty young girls. Probably my most anticipated release of the year was Candyman. Okay, it was tied maybe with Halloween Kills because, you know, I'm always partial to our old friend Michael Myers, but Candyman didn't disappoint. Not that Halloween Kills did, it just didn't make my list. The original Candyman was one of my favorite horror movies when I was a teenager, and I ate up the references to it. I may have actually gasped at one point when there was a reveal that was a huge nod to the original movie. The shadow puppets used to tell the backstory and illustrate the history of Candyman were incredible, and I would literally watch a whole movie using that type of storytelling. The kills, whew. The art gallery massacre is probably my top death scene for the year. The only one that could contend with it is probably the bread slicer scene in the Fear Street trilogy. That's a weird thing to say, right? My top death scene for the year. One of the characters, William, says, Candyman is how we deal with the things that happened, that are still happening. And Nia DaCosta's Candyman takes on the themes of the original and expands them and makes a movie that is more socially relevant and gives voice to the community of Cabrini Green, who in its predecessor were Candyman's victims.
Now you want to talk about reading? Let's talk about reading.
The library is open.
Okay, maybe not that kind of reading. But here are three of my favorite books of 2021. I picked two nonfiction books, which is very unusual for me, but I really wanted to highlight these two because I think they both really bring something interesting to the horror, the literary horror world, I guess. So here is Scream, The Voices of Horror, Volume 1, edited by Catherine Bensid, is a series of personal essays written by women and non-binary horror fans about their connection to horror. And I think it does such an incredible job of illustrating why horror fans, A, become horror fans, but why they are so invested in the genre. Because horror means so much to people. It helps people deal with trauma. It helps them find their place in the world. In a letter from the editor at the beginning of the book, Kat Bensid writes, "Horror has given us all a home. It might be a little run down, knife holes in the exit doors, and some blood splattered on the beautiful white tiles in the bathroom, but it is our home. This home houses all of our trauma, our laughter, spirits, and friendships." And this resonates through the entire book. I love how Kat has used this opportunity to amplify some voices and get people in a book that maybe thought they would never be in a published book. Next up, we have Monsters, Makeup, and Effects, Conversations with Cinema's Greatest Artists by Heather Wixon. So I was lucky enough to interview Heather for a bonus episode in October. So if you haven't listened to that, I highly recommend it. But it was a really fun conversation. We talked about some of her must-see Halloween movies as well. But Monsters, Makeup, and Effects is a book that really surprised me because it wasn't something that I thought I would have a lot of interest in. But as a genre fan, makeup and makeup effects are huge. And you think about some of the incredible transformations or monster makeup that we've seen in horror. These people should really be getting so many more accolades. And yes, we know a lot of the big names, but let's be honest, there are a lot more people working in this field. Heather took these conversations that she had with some legendary artists and compile them into a book that is really a testament to tenacity and creativity. And I absolutely loved it. It was, to be quite honest, it's actually inspired me to pay closer attention to folks that create the movies that we love beyond the directors and the actors and the writers. This is only volume one of a 4-volume set. So I'm looking forward to the other 3 volumes coming out soon. And my fiction, favorite fiction of the year was Red X by David Demchuk. David Demchuk is a Canadian author and playwright, and he took the true horrifying story of serial killer Bruce MacArthur and used it to create a deeply personal and disturbing horror novel. In it, gay and bisexual men are disappearing off the streets of Toronto, which is what happened in the Bruce MacArthur case. And over the course of 3 decades, some of their friends follow the thread of their disappearances. They discover a supernatural element at play. It's grisly, but not really gory, heart-wrenching, and absolutely fascinating. But what sets this book apart are the autobiographical sections in which Demchuk shares his own personal demons and traumas. So interspersed in the story are accounts of his real life and meditations on his own personal fears. There's an air of dread that permeates the whole novel, and it really captures the fear and uncertainty of a community under an existential threat. It wasn't my most enjoyable read of 2021, and I really struggled with what book I was going to put here, but this one really, really stuck with me and really affected me. So that's why I chose Red X, and if you haven't read it, I highly recommend that you do. Up next is a little segment I like to call Ryan's Book Corner. Ryan and I may have initially bonded over our love of horror movies, but we probably talk about books as much, if not more, now. He's been on the podcast many times, including last year's Best of episode, in which he shared his favorite reads of 2020. It was such a fun discussion that I thought we would do it all over again this year. Welcome back, Ryan.
I like the sound of Ryan's Book Corner. It has recurring segment material, if you ask me.
It does. We should do more book corner episodes, I guess.
I mean, I don't want to pressure you, but if that's what the people want, I'm here for it.
So you're going to tell us about your best books of 2021. But first, before we talk about that, tell me, do you have a favorite horror movie that you watched in 2021?
Damn. I should have thought about that because I'm sure that I did.
I know there were a couple that I really liked that you did not like this year.
Oh, yeah. Which ones?
Malignant and Halloween Kills.
Yeah. Those fucking sucked so bad. No, see, the thing is, and I think I said this on our Castle Rock episode, but I just don't watch movies a lot anymore, unfortunately. Or it's like I watch the same ones over and over again, which sucks, I know, but it's what makes me comfortable, so.
Yeah, that's fair. So tell us a little bit about how you came up with your best books list for 2021. Are you going to give them in order or?
So I didn't rank them. They're actually just in order of like the order that I read them in. Because at the end of the year, I went through like the list that I keep of the books I read. And I was like, oh, that one and then that one and then that one. So it's really just an order in the order that I read them. And I decided not to rank them. I thought about it, but it's really hard with so many good, amazing books. And some of them are so different from each other, too. It's like there's just no comparison. So it was way too hard to rank them, so I just decided not to.
Yeah, I can never rank things for, like, even last year. It wasn't my, I think I had 20 things on the list, and they weren't ranked in any way because I was like, I can't rank them, especially like from that. For me, I was talking about video games, books, events, like a whole bunch of different things. So it was really hard to rank them in order.
Yeah, for sure.
And like last year, these aren't books necessarily that came out this year. They're your favorite, or this year, I keep saying this year, last year. They're your kind of your favorite first reads of the year.
Yes. Yeah, I'm looking at it now, and I'm seeing three books on my list that actually came out last year, and the rest, which I selected 10 books. Three of those came out in 2021, but the rest are like, some are super old. Some came out like, in the 2010s.
Nice.
It's hard to keep up with all those new releases because there's so many. Mm-hmm. So they just go on the list of like, I'm going to read this eventually. And then depending on how good they sound, I will either get to it right away or it'll just stay on the list forever until I finally get to it.
Nice. I think actually three of the books on your list are books that you recommended and that became some of my favorite reads of 2021 as well. So.
That makes me happy.
So let's get started. Which one do you want to start with?
Okay, so the first one, and I'm just realizing this right now, live. This isn't really a horror book, but I'm going to bundle. So I put Blacktop Wasteland by S.A. Cosby on my list. I think that was actually the first book that I read in 2021, and it was like such a good one to start off with. But then we also read Razorblade Tears by the same author this year. We both did. Mm-hmm. And I think I ended up putting Blacktop Wasteland on my list because I think I like that one a little bit better, but they're both good. And you'd like them a lot too, didn't you?
I did. Yes. Yeah.
He's just such a good writer. And I was kind of like earlier today, I was looking over this list and thinking about like, why did I select these books. And with S.A. Cosby, he's just, there's something super classic about his books. They're like classic crime fiction, but they're also very contemporary. And mm-hmm. he writes, I would say it's like mixing beautiful writing, but like not being too pretty about it. Because I mm-hmm. focus a lot on writing styles, and I don't like to be pulled out of a story if the writing is like trying to be too elegant or whatever. And he just has this awesome balance of like super good writing, yet you can get so swept up in these amazing stories that you forget you're reading.
And I think, like you said, that he writes so beautifully, but at the same time, he's tackling some pretty like ugly subject matter in yes. some cases, right? Like, and he... It's such a fine balance, but I think that's really what draws you in. And as yeah. for the, like, you talked about how they're kind of like timeless or classic, but they're very contemporary. Like, you think about Blacktop Wasteland could have been set like, you know, decades prior to when it's actually set, but it tackles some very contemporary issues. Like, there's kind of this, well, there's a lot of racial tension in it. And I think like he does that very well. Like, he brings that to life very well.
Yeah. That and just like the divide between classes and representing people of poverty, just super, super well, and trying to just climb out of that and being stuck in this America that just wants to keep you,
yeah.
you know, flattened back down. And that's the other thing too, both of his books that I've read, Blacktop Wasteland and Razorblade Tears, are so atmospheric, and he's really, despite, you know, writing about such challenging themes, he's really proud of like the Southern aspects of his work.
It reminds me when we talked about The Elementals and how like you can feel yourself in that book. I feel yeah. like, you know, S.A. Cosby's books are very similar. Like, you
totally.
Imagine yourself in the town that they're in.
Definitely.
So why do you think Blacktop Wasteland won out over Switchblade Tears?
Because I think with Razorblade Tears, it was
Switchblade Tears. Thank you.
Oh, I didn't know if I imagined that or not.
No, you didn't.
I think with that one, though, its themes were great, but it kind of felt just a little bit too on the nose for me, whereas I felt like the themes of Blacktop Wasteland were more kind of like, I don't know, just maybe a little more elegantly entwined with the narrative, that it felt more natural. Whereas right. with Razorblade Tears, it's like, oh, now here's the Full House moment where they have this like realization.
The Full House moment.
Yeah, the piano music plays.
Yeah.
Well, gee, I'm sorry, Stephanie. I was a real homophobe.
Oh my God. A very special episode of Full House.
Could you imagine?
All right. So next.
Next. We read this book together and we talked about it at length, but no one will ever hear that. The Descent by Jeff Long. Such a good book. It's like this. So it has a sequel, and I believe it was intended to be a trilogy or maybe even a series. But Jeff Long has mostly stopped writing or stopped publishing. And The Descent is just so good. It's like this super scary sci-fi horror on a grand scale. There's like lots of rich world building. Parts of it are just terrifying. And it's just one of the most unique books I've ever read.
Yeah, it's dense. Like, it is a dense, dense book. Part of that is the world building that you talk about. Like, mm-hmm. Jeff Long does such a great job of creating all of these characters, and some of them are very unlikable and some of them are very likable. And the creatures, they're terrifying.
Totally. And I think I described it at the time as if the Da Vinci Code were better and also super scary is yeah. kind of the vibe, because it's like this international tale going across multiple continents
and under multiple continents.
Under, yes. It's just so good. And this book, The Descent, if you haven't read it, it's not the source material for the movie, which we also both love and is mm-hmm. the best movie ever. But it's not related to that in any way. But when I was much younger, I thought that it was because I saw this at the library and I was like, oh, The Descent, the book, I'm going to get it because the movie is amazing. And it turned out not to be that at all. So I just never got through it. So I revisited it in 2021 and now it's like my favorite, one of my favorite books ever. So highly recommend that one.
And you read the sequel as well. I haven't read the sequel yet.
Oh, you didn't? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the sequel is called Deeper. And it's different from the first one, but in good ways. It's less dense, I think, and it's more like adventure-y. Mm. But you can kind of tell, whereas like the first one was like a lot of world building. The second one kind of has that established world and it's so fast paced. I think I read it in like half the time that I read the first one. And it's just enjoyable and just really, really great. And I think it came out like almost 10 years after the first one. So his writing changed and maybe matured a little bit because it's a little less, like I said, less dense and wordy, but yeah, also super good.
I'll have to read that one. Maybe I'll add that to my list for 2022.
Yeah, just be prepared to be sad that he never continued on with the story.
Yeah.
That's the only bummer.
All right, next up.
Next up, I think you are currently reading this one or finished it maybe, Let the Right One In.
Yeah, I'm about 100 pages from the end.
Let the Right One In. I originally had zero interest in reading it because I don't know what the deal is. For some reason, I saw part of the movie like when years ago when it was new and I just wasn't into it. So I was like, well, I'm never going to read that book because it's not my thing. But I got an anthology of short stories and the best story in that collection was by the same author. And it was so good that I was like, oh, maybe I will give that book a try because he's a really good writer. And yeah, the book is just amazing. And then I watched the movie and I was like, how did I ever think that this was not good? It's also amazing. And it made me, well, this wasn't the book that got me more into reading vampires, but I read a lot of vampire books last year. And this book is a large part of that.
Yeah, it's funny. So I've owned the movie for many years on DVD, and I've never watched it. In fact, Jer and I were going to watch it one night when I first got it, and I fell asleep within the first 5 minutes of watching it. And then I was like, oh, well, clearly I'm not meant to go back and watch it. And then you started talking about the book and I was like, okay, I'll read the book and then see. And now as soon as I'm done the book, I'm going to watch the movie. But I said to you yesterday, I think this is going to become one of my favorite vampire stories. Like, it's so good. It's not what I expected at all.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, I don't know what I was expecting, but in a lot of ways, it reminds me of like classic vampire literature. I guess because of everything that I knew about the movie, I thought it was going to be more of like a personal, intimate vampire type story, which it is, but it also has this like broader, it really gets into the nitty gritty of vampires in a super cool way. And I really liked it.
There are parts that are just downright gross and like shocking. And there is a part with cats that I wish I had been warned about.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's so good. And I like that, you know, it takes a lot of traditional vampire tropes. For instance, like you have to be let in, you have to be invited in. You have to be, a vampire needs to be invited into your home. And they incorporate a lot, or he incorporates a lot of that traditional vampire lore, but does it in a really interesting and modern way. Although it's set in the 80s, right? I think.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, modern compared to like Dracula.
Yes, exactly.
So my next book is also a vampire book. And I can't decide if I like this one more than Let the Right One In or if they're like on par, but they're also very different. And this is Fever Dream by George R.R. Martin. And I've never read Game of Thrones, never seen Game of Thrones, but I can assume that this is a lot different from his like super hardcore fantasy work. Mm. It's this really, really good vampire story that takes place in the 1800s. And it largely takes place on like steamships or some type of boat that they would sail in the rivers of the U.S. And so it's just very atmospheric because it takes place on the river and there's like a lot of boat knowledge. It's almost like the boats are the backdrop for the story in a way that like a big spooky mansion would be for a haunted house.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. And the main character reminds me so much of Bill Hodges from the Mr. Mercedes books by Stephen King, because he's kind of like this really gruff, no-nonsense, doesn't really have anything to do with anyone. But there's kind of like this sensitivity and heart underneath that like rough outer layer. And it sets up for a very surprisingly sentimental vampire story, which you would not expect. It's so, so good. And I should also mention George R.R. Martin also has a werewolf novella called The Skin Trade. And it is, looking at my shelf, it's in a collection called Dark Visions with Dan Simmons and Stephen King. So that's how I found it. But that's also really good. But Fever Dream is just spectacular.
Hmm. I love a good vampire story, so I'll have to check it out. And did you say it was a novella, or is it a full novel?
So, yeah, The Skin Trade is a novella. Fever Dream is just a full-on book. Yeah, so my next book, this one's a shocker. The Last Days of Jack Sparks by Jason Arnup. And you read this one, too.
I did read this one, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I was afraid you didn't like it as much as I did, because I kind of raved about it.
I loved it. It creeped me out so much.
Yeah. So the reason why I said that this is a shocker is because I usually don't like a lot of humor or like sassiness in my horror. I don't really go for horror comedies, and I fucking hate Grady Hendrix. But this book, something about it just really worked. The main character is this unlikable asshole, but it is so like integral to his arc and like the entire story. So it's like, it's witty and there are funny moments, but it doesn't go too far and it doesn't like kind of step on its own heels. And there's also like a meta aspect of it too, because it's like a book within a book, but also that doesn't go too far to be just confusing. It's all just really good, perfectly balanced. And he doesn't, and when I say he doesn't step on his own heels with the humor, because there are some scenes in it that are so creepy. And it's just, it seems like this writer, who I've never read any of his other work, but he's really smart and knows when to pull back. And yeah, all I have to say is, Grady Hendrix, you fucking wish you'd written this book. You fucking wish.
I love really it. Hate Grady Hendrix.
I'm just over it. I'm so over it.
So what do you like? What do you think was the scariest part in this book?
The thing that sticks like immediately out in my mind is the scene when you think it's just going to be like this colossal like fuck up of idiotic paranormal investigators just shouting and fighting with each other. And then suddenly it's like, oh, you remember the movie Host when there's a fucking face just like standing in the living room? So like basically that happens in the book and it just keeps shouting. It's just like Mimi. And it's just, it probably sounds silly the way we describe it, but it's so creepy. And I just wasn't expecting it to go there.
Yeah. There's quite a few scenes like that, that I was not expecting it to be as scary as it was. Yeah. It's funny that the humor isn't what sticks out for me. Like it is the scary moments like that. But I do love the way that he's kind of this, he's such an unlikable character, but you really do start to feel bad for him at some point, because everything that he's going through is horrendous.
Yeah. There's a part that always stuck in my memory where early on in the book, he's kind of like, oh, well, you know, this family dealing with this haunting, they didn't really want any, you know, reporter type people or writers there. But when they heard it was me, they said it was okay because they love my work. But then like a few chapters later, you read that from another character's perspective where they're like, yeah, this family didn't really want him there. But when he offered them a lot of money, they said it was okay. Mm-hmm. So it's like that kind of thing where it's like witty, but it's also kind of like sad. And there's kind of like a sadness about him.
Yeah. He's a skeptic, right? Isn't that how it, like, he goes and like debunks things? Is that not, am I remembering that correctly?
I think you are. I think it's like he doesn't believe it in real life, but he's like, he's that type of guy where he's like, well, prove it to me. If you know, just you better prove it to me. Okay. Next is Come Closer by Sarah Graham.
I haven't read this one yet, and I can't wait to read it.
So this one was actually published in the early 2000s, I think. And this year, it's just had this kind of like revival where suddenly a lot of people are talking about it. Because it's been on my list for a long time, but like my library had no copies. The ebook, I don't know, I just didn't want to pay like full price for a book that was so old. but then it got so popular finally that my library got it, and it was great. Oh, and also, it still might be on Kindle Unlimited now, too.
I don't think it is anymore. Or it's not in Canada anyways.
Oh, darn.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good. It's a short book, but it's like very lean, and it's not too long. And I don't want to give much away because it's just a really good, creepy, creepy book. But it's ghostly and kind of like The Exorcist vibes. And it's very well written. I loved it.
I love the cover of it. Like I've seen it numerous times, and I always think, oh, I'm going to order that. And then because I am frugal sometimes, every time I get this urge to buy it, I'm like, oh, it's too expensive.
Yeah.
And my libraries don't have it. So
I don't even remember when I read this book, but I think I ended up getting like a gift card for my birthday or something. And I was like, I'm finally going to buy a physical copy of this book because it was great.
Nice.
Okay, so my next one, you read this one too, Come With Me by Ronald Malfi.
I did read this one.
I hope I'm saying his last name right. But I actually bought, so Come With Me and The Last Days of Jack Sparks, I bought those at the same time. And it was like a really rare occasion when I went to a bookstore and I was like, I'm just going to treat myself to some random, I'm just going to like pick some books off the shelf and grab them. And I got really lucky because I picked like two amazing books. So Come With Me was so, so good.
It's haunting. It is.
Yeah. That's the best word for it.
You know, like sometimes, after reading a book, like you just have this kind of like book hangover.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt with that, where I was like, this book was so heavy and so sad that it took me a while to recover. I don't know that I'm still over this book.
Yeah, it was so rewarding, but at the same time, I was like, I wish there was more of it, or I wish I could like forget it all and read it again because it was such a good read. The best way to describe it is a movie. It's as if a movie like Prisoners was a really good supernatural book. It kind of has that like gritty vibe to it. And there's this, it's very genre blending too, because there's like an investigative element, a true crime element, and then also a very much a supernatural vibe going on. And I really liked the way it was written too. I wasn't sure at first because the narrator writes as though he's like writing a letter or speaking to somebody named, I think her name is Allison. So the way it's written, it's like, so you see Allison, I went to the store and blah, blah, blah. But I thought it might have been off-putting at first, but I got into the groove very quickly, and it's just such a good book. Actually my first book that I'm reading this year is a Ronald Malfi book, Bone White.
Oh yeah. How is it so far?
I'm only a few chapters in, but I'm into it.
Nice. The other thing I really liked about this book is sometimes, you know, when a title or a certain phrase is used a lot in the book, sometimes it gets tedious. Come With Me is in the book so often.
Yeah.
But it's done so well that half the time I wasn't even like, oh, that's the title of the book. Like, it's just so natural. It's just woven in there so well.
Yeah. Sometimes it feels like a catchphrase when that happens, but it didn't in this book.
I think that's a perfect way of putting it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for a book with, that will give you an emotional hangover and, is very sad and heartbreaking and spooky at the same time, Come With Me is my recommendation.
Definitely. It's very good.
It is.
Okay. So my next one is another book that we both read, The Turnout by Megan Abbott.
Yes.
Now, I loved this book so much, and I really, even now, can't put my finger exactly on what it is, but I went into some book groups that I'm in on Facebook, and I was like, hey, and I don't do this often, but I was like, hey, I just read this, and it was amazing. Is anybody else reading this? Because it just came out. And a lot of people were like, yeah, that book sucked. And I was like, what are you talking about? It was so good. But here's the thing, and this is a discussion for not here. But this book does contain a lot of heavy elements, and it tackles a lot of very heavy topics that are, you know, very triggering to some people. Mm-hmm. And I would just say, I don't think you can go around telling people a book sucks just because it contains things that might have triggered you. Like, yeah, if it has those triggers and very negative portrayals, that's a different thing. But I think this book just did a fantastic job of telling the story that it had to tell. It was just, it was heavy, but at the same time, it was good. And the other thing I really loved about it, in addition to just being beautifully written, it just so good, but it was also one of those things where it's like, it kind of takes place in this whole world within a world. You know, like the world of ballet.
Yes.
And dancing school and like the whole rush to get ready for their holiday ballet performances. Mm-hmm. I just really like stories like that. And I think that was part of the big appeal of like The Queen's Gambit.
Right. That
super popular show, because it's like introducing all of us as outsiders to this world that exists, but like we know nothing about.
Yeah.
So it was like reading The Turnout was like bringing us into this like weird ballet world where it was all very, very serious to them.
Yeah. Like the talk about like, so they're doing the Nutcracker and the one thing that really stood out to me, because I this kind of was something that I could relate to, was this notion that when little girls see the Nutcracker for the first time and they're like, this is everything. I want to be in the Nutcracker. And then they grow up to be moms, and those moms take their daughters to dance school because so that they can go through it all again. And I remember the first time I saw the Nutcracker, I was like, this is so magical. And I can, well, not having children, but I can, and not being any kind of a dancer, because my mom can tell you that when she took me to dance classes when I was four, I quit because I was bored because I said, all they do is kick and I hate it. And so my mom was like, okay,
that's fair.
We'll find something else for you. I just found the idea of this kind of love of something being passed down through generations, as kind of like really fascinating, but then it's kind of twisted the way some of those traditions are passed down.
Yes,
in the families. So
yeah, that's a good way of putting it. There's lots of twists, and I think I told you originally it very much gave me the vibe of like Daphne du Maurier and kind of that Rebecca vibe, which was one of my favorite books of last year.
That's right, it was.
Yeah, so I'd say if you like Rebecca or Black Swan, you want to read The Turnout.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, I think this book was originally recommended by S.A. Cosby. And I was like, okay, I'll check that out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is very heavy. It has some very triggering things in it.
But it's done, I feel like it's done in a cathartic way where there is resolution.
Yeah. It actually also reminds me of that debate that comes up on Twitter, and I'm sure other places, but I see it mostly on Twitter, where people talk about, you know, movies where characters do despicable things, and they're like, that's not necessarily an endorsement of what that character is doing. It's just a depiction of what they're doing. And I feel like The Turnout does that really well. Like, mm-hmm. you probably won't like a lot of the characters in The Turnout. And you won't approve of some of the things that they do, I'm sure. But overall, it's such a colorful and fascinating just like depiction of this, like you said, this insular world of ballet.
Yeah. Yeah. It just really stuck with me. And I got a physical copy of it for Christmas and I was so happy. I was like, I've already read this, but I'm really glad that I have it now because I will read it again.
That's awesome.
Okay. I got one more, and this one also came out in 2021, and it's Almost Ruth by Tyler Jones. Now, I'm not being biased here because I did some illustration work for Almost Ruth and a lot more of Tyler Jones's work, but this one was like just different, and I was super lucky to read it before it actually came out. So the final version's even better. But think like, I don't even know how to describe it. Old, like 1800s Pet Cemetery would be kind of like a good vibe point. It's very emotional. The characters just feel real. I really loved it. It's very spooky, very creepy, and mysterious too. It's hard to figure out what to say because I don't want to give it away. But it was a good read. It reminded me a lot of Pet Cemetery, but it's not like not similar in plot or anything at all like that.
Yeah, I do have to read it. They're all on Kindle Unlimited, right? All of his books, I believe.
They are on Kindle Unlimited. And I think hardback and paperback. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's both. But yeah, so. And like I said, I like stories where there's like really realistic feeling characters. And mm-hmm. that's a big thing with this book. So you start in the book and it's about this man who works in the death industry doing like, you know, digging graves for the local cemetery. It takes place in this very rural, small village where everyone kind of knows each other. And their rules and their way of thinking about death is a little bit different, and I won't say why, but it's just the first time I read it, I was like, I told him, I was like, this is the one, this is a good one. And he has a follow up, like a connected short story, that's included in the book. So like, if you buy a book, you'll get like a connected story with it. So it's just like really rich world building too, which I also love.
Awesome.
I think that's it.
That's it?
I think that's it. I had a couple more, but they weren't really horror, so I trimmed them off.
All right.
Oh my God, no, I forgot one. Okay. I forgot the best book. A Simple Plan by Scott Smith. I can't believe I skipped right over it. I also can't believe that I read it in 2021 because I feel like I've been talking about it forever.
You have been raving about it for quite a while now.
And did you read it?
I have not read it yet.
Okay. You'll have to read that one this year. So Scott Smith is the author of The Ruins, which I talked about last year as part of my favorite books of 2020. And A Simple Plan might be better. It's just... So The Ruins was like really hot, right? It took place in a jungle and it was very like hot and atmospheric this way. A Simple Plan is cold, takes place in the snow. I think it's like rural Minnesota or whatever. I could be wrong about that, but it's a thriller in like the truest sense of the word. Like I describe it as the perfect thriller because something fucked up happens, and it's kind of like the way the story unfolds is like a chain of characters reacting to what's unfolding around them, and they keep making the worst decisions imaginable for the sake of greed. It's really a story about like how far people will go in the name of greed, and every time you think that like the story has hit its peak and it can't go anywhere but down. It keeps getting crazier and crazier. And, like, that's the only way I can describe it. It's so good. Like, I was shocked reading that book. My mouth was hanging open the entire time I was reading. It was just, it was, like, really just the most compelling thing I've ever read.
And so when I read it, it's going to be, like, me texting you and being like, oh, my God. I doubt that's going to happen.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, it just blew me away, and I can't wait to read it again, but I know it's going to be one of those books where it's like, I'll never be able to read this for the first time again, which sucks, because it really did a number on me. And it sucks that Scott Smith doesn't write more books, because he's so good at it.
There's a plan. There's a movie about it too, right?
Yeah, the movie's pretty good. It cuts out a lot, of course, but it's a good movie.
Well, I'll have to read that and then watch the movie.
Yeah.
Awesome. Anything you're really looking forward to in 2022?
No. I mean, I have no plans.
Are there any books coming out that you're looking forward to?
I know that, you know, for the Castle Rock Club, we're reading Needful Things next month.
Yes.
I'm super excited about that. But really, my reading goals for 22 is to kind of just slow down a little bit, because I have shit to do. Can't be reading all the time now. But also, it's like, I reached a point where I was so fed up with, like, tracking these books and counting these books. So I'm going to just play it by ear all the time now and just, you know, read what I feel like when I feel like. So I'm kind of like in that mindset.
Yeah. I don't know if we talked about this in like last year's episode, but I kind of got to the point where, because I use Goodreads, I know you use StoryGraph, right?
Yes.
So I use Goodreads, and I started reading StoryGraph, but I just never got really into it. But I always set at the beginning of the year, I set a goal for books. And this year, like middle of December, I was two books behind it. I'm like, I'm not going to catch up. And I was like, okay, I can speed through these books. I can do it. And then I'm like, why? Like, why? It's an arbitrary number that I pick at the beginning of the year. And like, why am I going to ruin my enjoyment of this book just to get to that number? So I was like, you know what? Just take your time, enjoy the book, and just let it be.
And totally. When I was reading all the Stephen King books, like my Stephen King journey for the first time, I reached a point where I was like, okay, if I really bust it out, I can finish my last Stephen King book at the end of 2020.
Yeah.
But then I was like, you know what? That's stressful. And I don't want to rush, because I'm actually going to be sad when I'm done with all of his books. So I actually ended up finishing the last one in January of 21. And it's like, that was fine, because I gave myself time to really enjoy it.
Right.
And that's all that matters.
And unlike this year, where we had two Stephen King books, or last year, it doesn't feel like a new year. Last year, when we had two Stephen King books come out, I don't think we have any coming out this year, or as far as I know.
Well, we got that Gwendy's fucking final feather, whatever. I hate those books, but yeah, we got that to look forward to. I look forward, quote unquote.
Fair. All right. Well, thank you for coming on today.
Thank you for having me. You know, I love to talk about books. I could do it all day.
So tell us what you've got coming up, and tell us where we can find you.
So in February, Tyler Jones's short story collection, Burn the Plans, comes out. And I've illustrated every story in that collection, and it's a great collection. The stories are so good. He's actually working on like one last story now, and it sounds good, and it's a long one, so I'm really excited to read that. But the whole collection's great. So that comes out in February from Cemetery Gates Media. And I don't know. So I've also illustrated the StokerCon 2022 souvenir book. And from what I understand, you have to be at StokerCon to get that book. But it's also like, is that still happening because COVID, you know? So yeah. I don't know what's going on with that. And so For the past year, I've been working on artwork for other people, which is great. It's been so fun, and I wouldn't change anything about it. But this year, I'm kind of having a plan. If I get some free time, I'm going to reread It, Stephen King's It, and I'm going to illustrate it. And I'm going to throw those bad boys. Yeah, I'm going to throw those up on my website and maybe see how that goes. But that's my plan. I'm going to reread It. Going to reread Needful Things, Under the Dome, all the really chunky ones.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So that's as much as I got planned.
Awesome. And where can people find you on Twitter?
That would be RyanM642. So Ryan, then the letter M, 642. And that's pretty much where I put everything book related and art related for now. I'll have my website up soon. And then, of course, that will just be posted on my Twitter. But also follow Tyler Jones at T Jones Writer on Twitter, because you'll get a lot of info about when that short story collection is coming out soon.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm excited about that. I think Almost Ruth is on Kindle Unlimited, so yeah. In Canada. So I'm going to read that, I think, very shortly. So
awesome.
Maybe once I finish Let the Right One In.
Yeah.
Although I think I'm going to try and read My Heart is a Chainsaw.
And A Simple Plan. And Deeper and Fever Dream. And
yeah, I have a lot to read.
I'll just keep naming books and you'd like fade me out.
Yeah, I would never, never. Thanks for coming on again. And we'll see you soon, I'm sure.
See me soon. Happy New Year.
So a quick update. Ryan mentioned his website and it has now launched, so you can check it out at ryanmills.art. Thanks for joining us today as we talked about our horror faves from 2021. There were so many other awesome things that I could have talked about. I didn't even mention my favorite horror video games, but let me know what you would have included on your list. Don't forget to check us out on social media. You can catch us on Twitter at @CatScaredy and on Instagram at @ScaredyCatsThePodcast. Subscribe wherever you find podcasts and don't forget to let us know what you think by leaving us a review. You can now leave reviews on Spotify as well. Until next time, stay scared.